ॐ ज्ञानचिमिदं तस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
The background of this is the well-known narration of Vyasadeva's receiving Narad Muni in his ashram. Vyasadeva was feeling morose. He was a great personality, a Shakti Avesha incarnation of God. And not simply an incarnation in name only, but he had performed the wonderful activity of compiling the Vedas, which was for the benefit of human society. Maya mukta jiva nahi Krishna shatagyan jivere kripa ko ele Krishna ved puran. Those who are bewildered by Maya, those jivas, they cannot directly see Krishna. And therefore Krishna very mercifully gave them the Vedic literatures. That is done through the agency of Vyasadeva. That this Bengali verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita explains a verse which we'll read from Bhagavatam in 2 days' time. Krishna Vanu. So Vyasadeva had compiled all the Vedic literatures for the upliftment of human society and had given all kinds of instructions for all kinds of people at all different levels of material and spiritual consciousness. And he himself had written, even while compiling the Mahabharata, he had written in the Bhagavad Gita,
in which he's
narrating that Krishna had told Arjuna that by all the Vedas am I to be known. And Vyasadeva himself had confirmed that at the end of the Mahabharata by stating, Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adavante Chanadhyecha Hari Sarvatra Gyate. That in all the Vedas, in the Ramayana, in the Puranas, in all the different Vedic literatures, in the Mahabharata, from the beginning, middle and end, the only subject is glorification of Lord Sri Hari. So he had compiled this Vedic literature for glorification of the Supreme Lord and for the upliftment of the conditioned souls, but still he was feeling morose. So Narad Muni came, as Prabhupada explained in one lecture, Narad saw that he is such a great personality, but still he is morose. So let me go and give him instructions to uplift him. And Narad Muni was able to analyze the cause of Vyasa's discontent. It's very interesting because Vyasa is the guru of all sampradayas. The guru finds out what is the problem and gives the proper solution, but he didn't find out the cause of his own moroseness. It's just like an astrologer, if he needs a serious astrological analysis of his own situation, he gets it done by another expert astronomer. Similarly, a doctor, he may be very expert, but if he himself is to be diagnosed, he has it done by another expert doctor. He doesn't do it himself. So here Narad saw there's a need for Vyasa to be instructed in the same knowledge that he's been instructing everyone else. And how that knowledge needs to be applied in his own life, for his own benefit. And because great personalities live for the benefit of others, by benefiting Vyasa, he will benefit the whole world. So Narad Muni pointed out the detail that you have stated that all the Vedic literatures are meant for glorification of Hari. But most people cannot appreciate that. And even in, for instance, the Karma Kanda section of the scriptures, which recommend opulent life by performing in the heavenly planets by performing various activities.
So,
even in that section, the actual purpose is glorification of Hari. But most people are incompetent to understand that. So Narad Muni chastised Vyasadeva. Jugupsitam, he said, it is abominable that you have directed people towards the enjoyment of their senses without directly delineating the real purpose of the Vedic scriptures. So he directed Vyasadeva to compile a scripture in which only the glories of the Lord are directly delineated. Because the Vedic literatures, they describe mostly dharma, artha, and kama. And in the Upanishads, moksha. But that the actual purpose is to understand Krishna, that is also stated in the Vedic literatures. A few verses here and there. But it is not clearly delineated. It's not clear to the conditioned souls. So Narada Muni advised Vyasadeva to compile a literature in which there is no recommendation for dharma, artha, kama, or even for moksha, but only pure devotional service to Krishna. And Narada Muni advised Vyasadeva that this will satisfy you, and that will give actual benefit to the conditioned souls. So at this point in the narration, Narada Muni has given his instruction and left Vyasa's ashram at Shamyapa. And Vyasadeva is seriously taking up the instructions of his guru. This is a characteristic of a proper disciple. He's able to take the order from guru and execute it. He's able to understand the essence of the guru's order and take it up and apply it practically in his life. For an intelligent disciple, a few words may be enough to direct his whole life. Words from his guru. Whereas others, they may hear again and again throughout their lives, but not be able to practically apply it in their lives. Prabhupada said that I only met with my guru, he said, no more than a dozen times. But nevertheless, Prabhupada, he was able to take the essence of his guru's instructions. Particularly, Prabhupada took very seriously Bhakti Sanswati's instruction that if you ever get money, print books. So on the basis of that instruction, given one time by Bhakti Sanswati Thakur, you can see what Prabhupada did. So Vyasadeva, he is very seriously taking up the order of his guru. He has to delineate the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So for that purpose, he is preparing himself by fixing his mind in bhakti yoga upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, previously in the Vedic literatures, he has described the Personality of Godhead. But understanding the nature of the conditioned souls, he has mixed such narrations with dharma, artha, kama, and moksha descriptions of these four principles. However, Narada Muni pointed out that if there is a narration of dharma, artha, and kama mixed up with the narration of Krishna, then the conditioned souls, they will be more interested in dharma, artha, and kama, and they won't understand the necessity of understanding Krishna. So, here it is stated, bhakti yogina manasi samyak pranihite male amale, without any tinge of materialism. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no recommendation for supposed material advancement. Therefore, at the very beginning of Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva declares, dharma projita kaitava atra. All kinds of cheating religion are fully kicked out herein. And dharma nirmatsaranam satam. This can be understood by devotees who are fully free from envy. In other words, the other Vedic literatures, they may be meant for the gradual elevation of persons from the platform of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Which means those who are still envious, they're cultivating envy. So actually one cannot properly understand Krishna as long as one is cultivating envy. Therefore, although all the Vedic literatures are meant for leading one to Krishna, without the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're all incomplete. All the Vedic literatures, they're written to gradually attract people to Krishna. But without the Srimad Bhagavatam, which directly describes Krishna, then what is the purpose? What is this in Narada Muni have pointed out? Vyasadeva, he wrote such a great body of knowledge simply to lead people to Krishna, but then he didn't, the actual point, he hadn't come to, he hadn't compiled. It was an extraordinary mistake. The Bhagavatam, that is Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam, it is that which is meant to, that which is meant for those who are free from envy. Now it is often asked that then why are neophyte or incomplete devotees also recommended to the Srimad Bhagavatam? The answer is that Bhagavatam is especially meant for liberated souls who are perfect devotees, but is also meant for persons who aspire to such a position, who are not cultivating envy in the form of dharma, artha, and kama, and moksha. So such persons can be purified and come to the position of envious less, of nearing non-envy, by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Vyasadeva is preparing himself for compiling Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore, he wants to have fixed in his mind a clear concept of the personality of Godhead. So in his ashram, which is a suitable place for such activities, it's a very peaceful place, far, far away from the activities of the normal society. That's in Bhadrak ashram. Until recently, one had to go there only by walking. That was the only way to go. Walking through the mountains for many days. So only persons very serious to go there could go there. Of course, we also find in the Mahabharata that Vyasadeva, he sometimes comes and he moves in ordinary society. For instance, when he was called by Satyavati to beget children in Amba, Ambika, and Ambarika. So sometimes he would also give advice to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Generally, he was in his ashram, or one of his ashrams. How he came? Well, he could have come by walking, or as a perfect yogi, he could have come simply by his desire also. As Prabhupada describes perfect yogis, they can enter the water of a river and come up elsewhere in the river immediately, many hundreds of miles away. Prabhupada also described in one lecture that there are yogis who daily take bath in each of the four dhams, or four particular holy places in India. So each of these four dhams is in one of the cardinal directions. Chanting japa, so you're listening to the lecture, or you're listening to the Maha Mantra, or both, or neither?
Both.
Oh, you must be a great yogi also. It's not recommended. So please listen to the class on it. So among the four dhams, Bhadrak ashram is in the north. In the east is Hula.
Puri.
Puri? Who said that?
Posthkazal Puri.
Must have been a yogi.
The point is yogi.
He already left. Went back to Puri. And in the west is Dwarka. And in the south? Ashiranga, Rameshwar. Did you say Rameshwar? Rameshwar. So these are a long way apart, in North India, South India, East and West. Prabhupada describes there are yogis who daily take bath in all these places. That means by their yogic power, they transfer from one place to another each morning. Prabhupada said, I have personally seen. Which suggests that Prabhupada himself is doing it, otherwise how could this person be sick? Oh, that's a useless question. So, anyway, Vyasadeva spent most of his time in his ashram, which was very calm, and quiet, and peaceful. And the only people there are yogis and rishis, and a few pilgrims who may have come in those days. They would also be in very pious mood. Of course, there may be very many calm and peaceful places, for instance, in Russia, in the forest. So that is nice for spiritual realization. But still, it doesn't have the same atmosphere as the Himalayas. And especially, Vyasadeva was, his ashram was by the side of the Sarasvati River, which is also a very sacred river. So these holy rivers in India, they produce, their very presence is purifying. And although there are many rivers outside of India, just like in Russia, we have the Volga and the Kama and the Moscow River and so many rivers. So one can take bath there, and that is materially purifying, but that does not have the same spiritual effect as bathing in holy rivers like the Ganga, Yamuna, or Saraswati. Of course, if we Rieka, is that the word for Rieka?
Rieka.
Rieka.
Second stress syllable.
Croatian it's Rieka.
Yeah, that's it.
Slovenian it's Rieka. Slavon. So, of course, if you chant Hare Krishna, that's even more valuable than bathing in the Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati combined. But nevertheless, the atmosphere of being in the Himalayas next to the Ganga, that is very special. And even though that atmosphere is very purifying, and even though Vyasadeva himself is a great, pure and powerful personality, nevertheless it's described in the previous, in verse 3, that he also performed archanam for further purification, and then engaged himself in meditation. Meditation on the personality of Godhead. Bhakti yogena manasi. This was not like the meditation of the impersonalistic yogis, but this was meditation in devotional service. And in his meditation, he saw what is the position of the personality of Godhead. Because in Srila Bhagavatam, he had to describe the personality of Godhead. Along with his material energy, which was under his full control. That material energy will be described in the next verse. And in the verse following that will be described how to get free from the effects of the material energy. So actually one should concentrate on the personality of Godhead and not the material energy. Often we hear devotees saying, well, how can I get free from Maya? It's good to think like that. But it's more important to think, how can I serve Krishna? Because if we think how to serve Krishna, then automatically we get free from Maya. So in Bhakti Yoga there are positive processes and negative processes of purification, which are technically called vidhi and nishedh. That which is to be done and that which is not to be done, that which is forbidden. So the things too that one should do are, for instance, rising early, chanting the holy names of the Lord, attending Mangalarati, and so on. And forbidden activities are, for instance, to eat food not offered to Krishna, to associate with non-devotees, and so on. But of the two, both are important for neophyte devotees, but of the two, the positively recommended activities are more powerful. Because simply by avoiding non-devotees, or simply by avoiding food not offered to Krishna, these activities in themselves do not give rise to love of Krishna. Whereas, if one cultivates the positive activities of devotional service, then he gains a taste for them. And if one gains a taste for the name of Krishna for devotional service, then even if he does, by mistake or by circumstance, engage in the activities that are forbidden, by the strength of his devotional service, the bad effects of that can be overcome. Of course, for neophyte devotees, we have to be very careful not to engage in forbidden activities. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, what is the symptom of a Vaishnava? He replied, asat sangatyage vaishnavacha, that the first characteristic of a Vaishnava is that he gives up bad association. So Vyasadeva, he saw the personality of Godhead and his external energy. The external energy is that which bewilders the conditioned souls. And the personality of Godhead is their true object of love. So the conditioned souls, they are directed by Vyas in the Srimad Bhagavatam to take their attention away from Maya and towards Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam clearly delineates the position of the personality of Godhead in relationship to his various energies. The Srimad Bhagavatam is both a book of philosophy and rasa. Ultimately, rasa is more important. As Prabhupada often pointed out, the gopis, who are the topmost devotees, they were not scholars of Vedanta, but their power of devotion was so strong that they were living exponents of the teachings of Vedanta. But that platform of devotional service cannot be reached without understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And even the science of rasa is completely based on philosophy. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva has compiled the fulcrum of all philosophical teachings. Fulcrum means in the weighing scale, mm-hmm. there's the thing in the middle. Yeah. It has to be exactly in the right position. And that's called a fulcrum. Mm-hmm. And, well, we can use that. We can just say essence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about
fulcrum is also used like that as a not as a as a demonstrative kind of term. Mm-hmm. Which is Krishna's two Bhagavans. Krishna certainly is the original personality of Godhead. This is to be understood by the conditioned souls who are aspiring for perfection. And all the philosophy of Bhagavatam is based on this point. So from the point of view of philosophy, the most important statement of Bhagavatam is this, Krishna's two Bhagavans. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has found out the most important teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam from the viewpoint of rasa, which is the ultimate attainment found in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is a very exalted subject which one has to come to by studying Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully and advancing in devotional service and understanding Chaitanya Charitamrita, which explains Srimad Bhagavatam in a manner which was anarpita, previously unexplained. So all this subject matter is being conceived of by Vyasadeva in his mind by the mercy of Narada Muni. And we'll discuss tomorrow, the described in the next verse, Vyasadeva, how he saw the influence of the material energy on the conditioned souls. So I can take one or two questions on this, and then any more questions can be asked in the afternoon. Well, I saw Narada on the last time first, so I'll ask him.
In the previous chapter, it is said that Vyasadeva said that he compiled Mahabharata for non-educated people, and he pointed out there that one should accept the cyclic succession. One should accept a spiritual master in the cyclic succession. But then what's the use of this cyclic succession, accepting spiritual master, if the ultimate goal is not delineated, as you mentioned?
Not delineated?
Yeah, you mentioned that he compiled all, previously he compiled all Vedic scriptures, but he hasn't delineated that the ultimate goal is attaining Krishna. So, but then, why should...
That means what's the use of accepting a spiritual master in Karma Kanda or Gyan Kanda?
Yeah, that he advises that to accept a spiritual master, but then what's the use of a spiritual master in the cyclic succession if he is not delineated that the ultimate goal is surrender to Krishna?
Did anyone hear the question? Well, that's the point. Without Srimad Bhagavatam, there isn't much benefit to going through the Vedic process. All these Vedic processes are useful in as much as they're supposed to help us gradually come to the point of Krishna consciousness. But unless one actually comes to that point, then it becomes useless. It's just like we see in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of the third chapter, Krishna recommends that one follows the cycle of Vedic life, which includes offering, making offerings to demigods, which part of that cycle is the offering of sacrifices. The whole Vedic culture centers around offering sacrifices, in which the Yajna Purush or the enjoyer of the sacrifice is Vishnu. So that is meant to, even though the in the different sacrifice, it may be Indra Yajna or whatever, but that is supposed to maybe done in the name of a demigod, but ultimately one is supposed to understand it as an imposition. But later in Gita, Krishna condemns demigod worshippers as fools. So the point is that if one simply, that one may take up following the Vedic culture at a certain level, so that he may become gradually elevated to Krishna consciousness. But if one doesn't become elevated, but can become stuck at a lower level, then it's completely. So, following the Vedic culture has relative value, but not ultimate value. Okay. Yeah. I don't have to say the same thing.
Yeah,